us. Make sense? Okay. I'd love to get a few client examples of like how you might define one of the more, and it doesn't even have to be a challenging relationship, but any of the relationships that you have, if you were to use energy language with and describe the dynamic with a client that you had right now, how could you do that? Would somebody be willing to give that a try? To name the white space between you and a client using energy language and using I statements. I'll give an example. I just had a challenging conversation with a colleague a couple of days ago. And I knew, you know, I made an appointment with this person because they were really avoiding me. And I was getting a lot of kind of negative in the white space, negative attitude, feelings of mistrust. And so I set up a time to meet with her and we met. And if I were to describe the white space for a good part of the time, it finally shifted in a really lovely way. But for a good part of the time, if I were to name the white space, I felt very on edge with her. I felt very cautious, and I felt very careful and very tender, and I felt a lot of staticky energy in the space between us. And eventually that softened, you know, as we continue to kind of dialogue. So who wants to give that a try? Like naming the white space between yourself and another person doesn't have to be negative. It could be positive experience. Okay, Chris, you want to give it a try?
I have a question first. Sorry. Mm-hmm. The white space, I want to understand what the white space is. Is it like the atmosphere that creates with you being an empath of what you're feeling?
Yeah, it's the energy between, it's how we would describe the energy between yourself and another person, the energy that's in the space, that's in the room. It's sort of like, you know, every person, every personality. Some people, when we are with them, it's like, Rita Marie, you won't like this analogy, but I'm going to say 7-Up and orange juice, right? Okay. Most people would say, hey, that's a great combination, right? Maybe we'll say Perrier and Limeade, okay? It's a nice combination. It's bubbly, it's fizzy, it tastes good. But we don't want to put with Limeade milk, right? It would curdle. So every two personalities create an energy dynamic, create a white space. Some people we feel really good and comfy with. Others we feel a little bit more, you know, it's just different. Like every two people, you're bringing your own empathic, as you say, qualities to every dynamic. It's not good, it's not bad. It's just with some people it's going to feel a really nice blend, and with other people it's going to feel, whoa, really, you know, whatever, ugly, off, strange.
Well, so in simple words, would be the vibe.
Yes, the vibe, right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Anybody else? Somebody want to give this a try?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are times where you have to be cautious of naming the white space because maybe it's not necessarily white space. Maybe they're having a different experience in some way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, certainly if it's going to, first of all, if you use the I language to describe your experience of the white space, it's pretty irrefutable. I mean, somebody can say, you're not feeling that way, you know, right? I mean, but you are. It's what you are feeling. So if I use I language, I'm feeling, you know, I'm feeling really happy. I know you're sad right now, but I'm feeling really happy, right? I mean, or I'm feeling really sad. I know you're feeling happy, but I'm feeling really sad right now. So usually if it's I language, we're pretty safe. But if it's that delicate, or a person is really in a, I'm going to use this language with you because you know what it means. If they're in a primitive brain state, right? If they're in that triune brain in their primitive reptilian brain, and they're in a fight response, then you don't want to be using much of any language at all. Then.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
My sense is, this is Tom, my sense is that you're feeling overwhelmed with the situation, and I'm not sure what direction is best for you to move in.
Okay. That was nice, except you talked about them. You said, my sense is you are feeling overwhelmed in this situation. I want you to just talk about what you are feeling, Tom. I'm feeling, you know, maybe I'm feeling overwhelmed in this situation, or maybe I don't know how to respond to you in this situation would be perhaps more appropriate.
Good point. I see your point.
Okay. So what we can do is we can ask, are you feeling, you know, what are you feeling in this situation? This is where so many of us get into trouble. We presume what the other person is feeling. And especially those of you who have been in long-term relationships, oh, you think you know your spouse and partner. You know,
I would be happy to share.
Okay.
And exactly, I thought maybe you were just segueing into what I was going to talk about with my husband. And this is where I'm really grateful for having been through some of this understanding. I used it with my children too. Which is, again, really helpful, especially since some of them are teenagers. But there was a situation where my husband was talking loudly about something, and I noticed right away my hackles were up, and I was, like, ready to go in there and be defensive. And so I noticed where I was holding it and what the feeling was, and I just shared with him, I hear you talking loudly, and this is how I feel. I feel some fear, and I feel some anger, and I feel some sadness. And it was like somebody popped a balloon. And he was like, oh, really? I said, yeah, that's just how I felt. And then he opened up about how he was feeling. And he told me afterwards, he goes, that was really weird. Usually you come in and you're like, oh, really? Well, I did everything I possibly could, and la, 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 la. And I was like, well, all those trips to California are paying off. But, you know, and so that was that experience with that.
That is a beautiful example, thank you, of the power of how it can completely shift the dynamics by using I language and naming the white space and naming what you are feeling, your own experience. So thank you for that great example, Lynn. Wonderful.
I have a situation with a client where I wanted to say these words. I wanted to say, I'm feeling polluted, blocked, stuck, pressured, but I was afraid to say them because I didn't know where to take it from there. That felt like I was being very almost insulting to this client. So I didn't say it.
I love what you're bringing up. And I love, well, first of all, if your heart is open and you say to that person, I feel really blocked right now, I'm not sure what to do or where to go with this. No, and it's when I have done that at times in the past, it is, first of all, two things I'll share with you. One is I'm always scared, right? Like, it's always a little scary, like, oh, God, here we go.
Yeah.
And two, it almost always brings a breakthrough for that client.
Okay.
Because if I'm in the soup with them, in meaning vulnerable and open and caring with my open heart, analyzing them, I'm not analyzing them by what I'm sharing. You know, well, I feel like, you know, stuck, or I feel, you know, like this isn't going anywhere, or I don't remember some of the other words you used, but then they might feel judged by that, right? But if the heart is open and you're sharing your experience and you're sharing the dilemma about that from that vulnerable place, then in my experience, it almost always evokes like a real breakthrough.
So that gives them opportunity to break. I mean, they're probably shocked to break and then offer more, so you can go on in a different situation.
I mean, first of all, it's the courage for you to be authentic with them, right? That's part of what you're talking about. And they need it. I mean, because if there's a way that they really are being resistant and dug in and all of that, then I'll come to you in just one second, Lynn. Then they do need to be challenged, right? They also need to be challenged by your authentic experience. It can be very helpful to know how what I am doing is landing with somebody else. We don't often know the impact. Most of us do not know the impact we have on other people. And that's what we're always trying to figure out and discover. How am I landing on that other person?
Right.
We're so busy blaming that we don't realize the impact our attitudes, our personalities, our words have on others. So it takes courage to reflect that. Okay, Lynn, yeah, you wanted to jump in on that.
Well, again, just coming from my experience, it was good for me. It was the courage to look at myself. So regardless of what further conversation came up, the empowerment of truly looking at how I felt in that moment was empowering. And so it gives you, like you said, courage for whatever else comes up after that. It's that first step. It's that first step in looking at myself to see, this is how I'm feeling, not to react to the person, because it wasn't about him, it was about me and how I was feeling about it. And so for me, it felt very empowering. And I was also going to share, John said in the chat, when reaching an important point in a conversation with someone, I can begin to feel shaky. I find it so powerful, it can be disrupting to the conversation, and I have to draw back. And that was how I was feeling right before I took that breath and spoke. I was shaky.
I love that I love that language. I was shaky, and for you and for John, because that shakiness is actually energy in movement. So can we all just say that to ourselves from an energy? Shaky is simply energy in movement. Emotion is simply energy in movement. Let's all say that one. Emotion is simply energy in movement. That's all that's happening. And so we want to be able to, and we need to be able to regulate that energy to some extent, right? So that's where you can do your grounding, can take some deep breaths, you can lean back in your chair, you can create your energy bubble, And just like a pressure cooker, you can let it out slowly, but that shaky energy is really great energy, and it's energy that will open the heart, will open the chakras. So we don't want to cut that energy off. We don't want to be afraid of it. We want to welcome it when it's happening. The energy is smarter than you are. That's another one you could memorize. The energy is smarter than you are. It knows what to do to re-regulate itself. So follow the energy. Follow the energy. The energy is the body's self-correcting healing mechanism. Super important. The energy in movement is the body's natural self-correcting healing mechanism. That is a really good thing when that's happening. There's so much more I could say about that, we'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. So I'm going to come back to one more slide here.
Pardon me, can you repeat that last statement you said?
The emotion is simply energy and movement. Was that it?
The next one?
What did I say?
About achieving balance.
Huh?
Energy in movement to achieve balance or something?
It's the natural self-correcting healing mechanism.
Right.
Energy in movement is the body's natural self-correcting healing mechanism. It's
Thank
a
you.
Good thing. Yeah. Okay. So the next key, essential key number 4, is to heal your energy body history. The issue is in the tissue. The issue is in the tissue, and when we change our relationship with the issue, we change the tissue. The energy will change. When we change our relationship with the issue, we change the tissue. So to do that, we have to heal our energy body history. So what does that mean? Let me tell you a story of a real case. This was a young man. He was in college when I was working with him. And he had terrible migraines all his life. And this kid grew up with a mother who was like totally into health and health consciousness and diet. And, you know, he was gluten free and dairy free and all this stuff. And he still had these, whenever things would get tense in his life, he would have these horrible, horrible migraines. He also grew up, so that was his mother, and his father was an alcoholic. So he grew up with a nutrition freak mother and an alcoholic father. And then he had these migraines. And what happened with him when we were in a session together is we were looking at and tracking, you know, the situations that were going on, the stressors in his current life and school, the demands of school, and then having to go back and visit his parents and what that was like. And as we were talking about it, and he started to get a migraine. So he came in just fine. I was feeling just fine, but now I'm getting a migraine talking about this. And he was getting mad. And he was getting mad at me because he was getting a migraine while we were talking about his issues. So, of course, you know, there's two parts to every healer, right? One is, oh, my God, let's stop and put him on the table right now and take away his headache, because that's my job, right, to take away the pain, not cause it. But I didn't do that because I knew that somehow we were in golden territory. And so what I did was we tracked that energy, the energy of that migraine, back to the very first time. I asked him, when is the very first time you remember having a migraine? And he had migraines all through his childhood. So we tracked back all through his childhood to the very first time he could ever remember getting a migraine, and he must have been about 4 years old, I think is what he said. And it was the first time that he could remember hearing his mother and his father having a screaming fight. and he was terrified. And he would hide under the table when they would fight. And then he had, as he's telling me this, he's crying. And he's having this memory. And all of a sudden, he has this big epiphany. He says, oh my God, those migraines were to block out the screaming of my mother and father. And he started laughing. And he was laughing hysterically because he had this amazing realization that these migraines actually took care of him. They served this amazing purpose for him. They blocked out these terrifying screams. He couldn't hear anything. He was so involved in the pain in his head that he couldn't hear anything outside there. And that was the better deal for him than the fear and the terror of what was going on out there. And as soon as he started laughing, when he stopped laughing, I said, how's your head now? I said, it's gone. And he has very infrequently had migraines since then. So that tracked us right back to the origin, right? The history, the issue is in the tissue memory, the cellular memory. Candace Peart's work did everything to prove the memory, the cellular, that there is cellular memory of everything that happens in our life. So I missed that comment that flashed up for a minute. Do you want to just share what that was?
Absolutely. So Janet was saying, if a client is healing by doing energy work, can they feel the shaky feeling you describe when they relax, when they lie down to go to sleep? Or is this nothing to do with healing? They do not knowingly feel scared and worried when going to sleep. So can it be a good sign, or is further investigation necessary?
Yeah, it's a great sign. I've almost never heard of it being a bad sign unless it was a seizure, like a grand mal seizure or something. And even seizures sometimes I think are still just the body, but it's not a healthy way to do it. But if it's just that shaky, then yes, it's in my experience, it's a very healthy thing. And I would encourage that person to just let the shaky happen until it comes to a completion. You know, if you've ever seen a National Geographic special where they track migrations in the wild, right? They track migrations. And they tag the animals to do them, right? And to tag them, they have to tranquilize them. They shoot them with these tranquilizers, and then they tag them. And then when the animals come out of that tranquilizer, they shiver and they shake, right? They're doing all that shivering and shaking stuff. And the ones that do the shiver and the shake go off to join the herd, and they're fine. And the ones that don't often become very sickly because it's simply a natural trauma release. The shaky is a natural trauma release. And when I say trauma, it doesn't mean like you have to have been held up at gunpoint to have a trauma. You know, there's anything that our body does not integrate in the moment. Any challenging experience that our body doesn't get to fully integrate in the moment will hang out in a residual way until we have the space and the time and the energy to let it release.
She says further, she says, thanks, it's not seizures. How long can it go on for? Usually weeks or months or years. And I want to share, too, that shaky feeling, having children, I would have that during transition. So I was curious if that's just a similar thing.
Yeah. You would have that in transition, you said? I'm not sure what you mean.
Yep. So when you go through transition in your body, when your body's preparing to actually deliver that child, you shake.
Yeah.
And tremble and everything like that. So as you were speaking that, it reminded me of that same type of shaky and trembling.
Yeah, the body knows what it's doing, you know? It knows what it's trying to do, and it knows what it's doing. And, you know, and we just have to trust and allow that process to follow and unwind itself. And as far as it taking weeks or months, you know, if we were to really fully surrender to the shakiness, it probably wouldn't take all that long. It might need to be done under the guidance of a professional healer. It would probably be safer that way if there's that much happening. And also, there's so many levels upon which we need to process stuff, right? So there might be an emotional piece that needs to be talked out with a therapist or a body-mind therapist or a healer. You know, we're complex people, so healing has to happen multidimensionally. But all that said, what I would just sort of in a generic way respond with saying that the body, if you really can safely let your body completely surrender over to the shaking, it's going to unwind itself, in my experience, most of the time, and then settle down. Things go in waves, and they have their span. Okay, so a few things to say about this. The brain is a malleable organ whose capacity for change is continuous and lifelong. And the brain loves to create patterns. It loves to create patterns. And if you grew up in a good enough home life, your brain created neural pathways that can re-regulate naturally. And after an emotional high or low or a stressor that happens, nobody grows up in life without some, you know, emotional challenging circumstances in their family of origin. It's just the nature of life. But if you grew up in a stable enough home life, then your brain learned how to re-regulate itself after a high or a low happened. But if you grew up in a really high stress or abusive environment, then the neurology wiring of your brain is more vulnerable to excitation and high anxiety responses that are longer lasting after a stressful experience occurs. And those people are going to have more difficulty re-regulating and coming back to what I call homeostasis after a stressful life event occurs. Now, most of you who are healers or health practitioners are going to have clients who are coming to you because they had some trauma somewhere, because something's off in their system, right? You know, they didn't overeat because they were happy. You know, they overate because there was stress going on. There were challenges going on. They didn't develop, you know, problems with their, you know, health problems because things were all A-okay. So they're going to show up to you with a need to learn how to re-regulate in a safe, gentle way. So what happened, though, is if we grew up in a dysfunctional home, which most of us did, then you learned how to adapt, right? And those adaptations have what we call a gift and a wound. You know, there's a gift and a wound in those adaptations. So for this young man who I just gave the example of the migraines, there is a gift in those migraines. The gift was they blocked out the horror of the screams, right? The wound was he had a migraine. And he continued to have migraines throughout his adult life when he was no longer living with his parents and there was no more screaming and his parents grew out of it. And, you know, that stage passed, but the migraines didn't, because the programming, the neurological programming of, oh, when something stressful happens, here's what we do. We block it out with a migraine. So his body learned how to do that to take care of him. So we adapt and we make adaptations. And there are certain, when we grow up in our home life, there's a certain set of emotions. There's an emotional range that's acceptable, and then there are unacceptable emotions in our household growing up, right? So, like, for example, you might have grown up in a household where it was unacceptable to get angry. Or maybe mom was the only one allowed to get angry, or dad, but not the kids, right? Be seen and not heard. Or maybe it was unacceptable to cry. Or maybe it was unacceptable to be sad, you know. Or maybe it was unacceptable to be happy. So we all grew up in a home life that had certain parameters, unspoken mostly, of what's acceptable in your household growing up. So it's unnatural to narrow that bandwidth. Like in our culture, in our traditional Western culture, it's pretty unacceptable to cry. But, you know, in some cultures, it's very acceptable to wail and grieve and, you know, be loud about it, but not in our culture, right? Because crying symbolizes weakness in the Western culture. So we might repress it, we might hold it back. You know, one of the things that I say to some of my clients is, you know, would you say that if somebody never laughed that they had a problem? And I go, yeah. Well, maybe the same is true about crying, right? Why is crying exempt from being a natural emotion? So so I'd love to hear some of your home life. What were some of the acceptable and unacceptable emotional parameters in your household growing up? Can anybody share a few of those?
Take a stab at it. Just accept things the way they are and move forward.
Okay.
A little reflection on how it's affecting you and people around you, I guess, would probably be one way to say. And I'm not saying that's totally the case all the time, but occasionally that was certainly a perception.
Okay. Accept the way the things are and move forward. Okay. Avis is sharing no crying and no anger. Okay. Yep. Lynn's, pull up your big girl panties and move along. Okay. Children should be seen and not heard, right? Yeah. Good. You feel as you hear these and as you read these, you feel the potency of that and the kind of like the ouch, you know, of that. Like, wow. That's something really that we were robbed of. And again, you know, for most of us, our parents and ourselves as parents, you know, those of you who are parents, it certainly wasn't out of malicious intent. You know, we all are doing the best that we can in our, you know, we get the legacy, we inherit the legacy, and then we pass it down, right? And, you know, my throat is locking up as Lynn is sharing. Okay, yeah. So it's bringing up, right, this movement from the past. So we're going to work with that now for a minute. So I want you to get your human body outline handy and your crayons and markers. So the paper that you have and your crayons and your markers. And I would like to ask you to just have that be nice and handy, really easily available. And before we use it, I'm going to ask you all to close your eyes, and I'm going to kind of prepare you for this exercise that we're going to do now. So closing your eyes and take three deep breaths. And as you breathe, don't force the breath into any areas. Just notice where your breath might be moving in your body and where it might feel stuck or locked up or restricted in some way. Don't try to force or fix or change anything. Just notice it. And be he or she who notices your breathing. And simply by paying attention. And I'm going to ask in a moment, I'm going to ask four questions of your body, not your mind. I'm going to ask you four questions of your body. And I'd like you to just notice the first part of your body that comes to your mind when I ask you this question. even if it makes no sense. I'd like you just to trust whatever comes to your mind when I ask you this question, even if it makes no sense. So the first question is, what part of your body is happy? And go ahead and put your hands there right now, really fast. What part of your body is happy? Don't think about it. Just let your hands go wherever your first impulse is to go. And if you're not sure, doesn't matter. Just make it up. Just pretend that you know. And let your hands go to the part of your body that you would think of as happy. And now with your hands there on that part of your body, I want you just to, with your fingers, just kind of palpate the tissue a little bit. Just touch into the tissue a little bit and notice this is what happy tissue feels like. This is what happy tissue feels like. Just with your fingertips, kind of palpate and touch in. This is happy tissue. Oh, okay. And now relax your hands on your lap and take another deep breath. Close your eyes or keep your eyes closed. And the question number two is, what part of your body is mad? And let your hands go there right away. What part of your body is mad? Don't think about it. Don't question it. Trust it. If you didn't move your hands yet, just move them anyway somewhere, even though it might feel like you're making it up. And just keep your hands there for a moment. And I want you to palpate that tissue and notice this is what mad tissue feels like. This is what mad tissue feels like. Just notice with your fingertips, this is mad tissue. The energy of mad lives in this tissue. This is what mad tissue feels like. Now go ahead and relax your hands on your lap and take another deep breath. And the third question is, what part of your body is scared? And let your hands go there. What part of your body is scared? And if it might even be to the same place as a previous place, that's okay. But you're palpating something different here. This is the scared part. And let your fingers palpate and touch into the energy of the tissue that is scared. This is what scared tissue feels like. Get to know it. And now relaxing your hands on your body, on your lap. Take another deep breath. And the fourth and last question is, what part of your body is sad? And let your hands go there. What part of your body feels sad? And let your hands go there. And with your fingertips, just palpate. This is what sad tissue feels like. Get to know it. This is what sad tissue feels like. And then relax your hands on your lap and take a deep breath. Now I'd like you to take about 2 minutes. And I want you to do this as fast as you can and draw with your markers or your crayons the energy of what you noticed for happy, mad, sad, and scared tissue on your paper. Just really fast, super speed. Be super speed about it. So you're not thinking with your right brain. I mean, you're with your left brain intellect, just drawing what you visualized.
Mm-hmm.
taking about one more minute. Okay, so what I'm going to ask now is for Lynn to put us back in some breakout rooms so we can do some sharing with your partner about what you found from that experience. Maybe you can hold up your picture and let them see it. And if you don't have a camera to see it, just talk about what each of you take a minute each and just share a little bit about what you experienced there with your partner. So we'll do 1 minute, and then Lynn will give a 1 minute warning. So you'll have a one more minute for the other person to switch. So we'll go ahead and go into breakout rooms.
Sorry, I have a question.
Yeah.
Dr. Rita Marie isn't on now. I have an extra person. Well, I will put myself in with that person.
Okay, great.
All right. Yep.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hi. I guess we're in a bigger group.
Hi. Yeah. How are you?
Okay. I was confused.
me too. Nothing was happening. I didn't know.
Okay. So I guess we have other people in the group? Or
I think it looks like it. Oh, I can't tell from my end.
Oh, okay. But everyone else is on mute. So I don't know if they're a part of it or not.
I don't know. I just see you. Do you just see me?
I see you, but I see other people in the... at the top, like in the group.
Oh, yeah, I don't see that.
Oh, okay. Well, then we'll share.
Okay.
Hi, Randy.
Hi. Do you want to go first? I don't know if I got. Yeah, you want to go first? Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So this is my. I don't know if you can see it. That's my little drawing.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
I felt the sad up here, in my head.
Uh-huh.
I felt the mad here in my chest.
Uh-huh.
I felt scared in like the navel, well, you know, like the solar plexus area.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I felt happy like in my belly, like my lower belly.
Yeah. That's sort of interesting how it's all different parts of your body.
Yeah. Because and I was just using the breath to really feel that, like what the breath was feeling. And